When your furnace or air conditioner quits, you need it fixed, fast. This is Dennis Sullivan, president of CARE Heating and Cooling. Our technicians are paid to fix your HVAC system, not sell you a new one. We show up on time, diagnose the problem, and get you comfortable again, without the high-pressure sales pitch. It's our commitment to honesty and craftsmanship that helped us win the Lennox Partner of the Year Award and a BBB Torch Award for Ethics last year. So, call CARE Heating and Cooling at 1-800-COOLING or book an appointment online at careheatingandcooling.com. When you need a company you can trust.
What's going on, everyone, and welcome back to the Surprise Jab Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Ruger, surprising you through topics every single week of the year, and jabbing you, of course, with your daily dose of UFC, and we are fresh off of UFC Paris, which I can say, look, we just had maybe one of the best crowds of all time in WWE last weekend at Clash in Paris, and we have officially had the best fight night of the entire year in Paris. So Paris is easily the best crowd for sporting events, entertainment events. I can say that outright. And on today's episode, we will be recapping everything that went down at UFC Paris, all 13 fights. We went 9-4. On predictions, with isn't too bad. I'm actually pretty content with that. Now we're 237-126 on the year, plus 111. Yeah, we're freaking nasty and making picks. Also on today's episode, we give our episode 5 of season 9 Dana White's Contender Series predictions, 5 new fights with 5 new opportunities to earn a contract. That goes down tomorrow, Tuesday, as I'm recording this Monday, September 8th. Also going to be recapping week 1 of the NFL season. We have had all games but one. That's right, we will be covering the Vikings and Bears game on the next episode. I will briefly talk about that before I go over the week 2 predictions. But other than that, we're going to talk about every other matchup that went down. I'm also going to tell you all about fantasy football. All six of my teams, give you the state of them. Then you can just roast me or let me know what is good, what I'm doing bad. And then also talk about the performances that we've had so far. So we got a lot on today's episode. There is no time to waste. Let's dive right on into it. And we kick things off, of course, with new UFC fights that have been announced, and we've really had no big ones. Now there's tons of rumors out there, but I only ever really cover the official ones just to be certain that, you know, stuff isn't just heebie-jeebie, because people are talking about Sean O'Malley, Song Yedong, Jan Blachowicz versus Bogdan Guskov, Armin Sarukian versus freaking Dan Hooker. So there's tons of matchups out there that are just in the rumor mill, but we have 11 official new ones to talk to you guys about today. So let's briefly give you all the rundown of some new fights that have been made official. So first off, the biggest one, I will say, of all the 11 we're going to talk about real quick, flyweight division, UFC Qatar, Alex Perez, the number 8 ranked flyweight, will be taking on the number 9 ranked Asu Almabayev. Really love this matchup. Just one of those matchups that I feel has always been on people's radar, but has never actually come to fruition. Alex Perez, 7-5 in the UFC, is ranked at number 8. I'm pretty sure, I don't know if this is certain, he has more cancellations than fights. I mean, this guy pulls out of everything. I believe his last win may have been against Matthias Nicolau. I genuinely don't remember the last time I saw Alex Perez fight. Like, I know he fought last year, 2024. I don't think he's fought this year, but this dude has had so many fight cancellations, it's ridiculous. As for Asu Almabayev, it's been a crazy year for him. You know, obviously he gets a short notice fight against Manal Cape in his first UFC main event. Was too premature for him. He gets TKO'd in round number 3. He's able to bounce back against Jose Ochoa, rising up and comer. Struggles, but is able to put on enough of a performance where people said he won. And he has been linked to other fights with top contenders, but here he is taking on Alex Perez. I love the quick turnaround. He's 22-3 professionally, by the way, which is utterly crazy. He's 31. Alex Perez is 32. And whoever wins this one is going to really, really need something big in their career to propel them forward. And I think for Asu Almabayev, he is more on the come up as Alex Perez. You may be surprised he got a title shot in 2020. In these last 5 years, he has, I think, won maybe one fight, maybe two, if I'm being generous. Like, it has been rough going for Alex Perez, but this fight will go down at UFC Qatar. Will probably be on the main card. It is a banger matchup. This one, UFC Vegas 111, going down November 8th in the featherweight division. Austin Bashee back for the third time this year to take on Jamal Emmers. Austin Bashee 1-1 in the company. Actually, it's a win over Askar, which is pretty good outside of the UFC. I don't know who his lone UFC win was. It might have been John Yanis, I genuinely don't know who he won his UFC fight over, but his loss was to Christian Rodriguez, who is a prospect killer. And you know what? I really like this bounce back fight for Austin Bashee. The kid is only 23 years old. Okay, so he has so much potential, and he's one of the day one contender series guys, so I'm excited to see him bounce back. Jamal Emmers, yeah, forward for the UFC. Somehow holds a win over Alexander Hernandez and Corey Sanhagen. I have no idea how Jamal Emmers has ever done that, but yes, those are his two wins he has in his career that are pretty notable, especially the Sanhagen one. That one's crazy to think, but yeah, Emmers, you know, this dude is pushing 40. His time in the UFC is coming to an end, but this will be his 30th professional fight. What a good opportunity for him. I think the last time I saw him fight, he was getting knocked out by Nate Landwehr, but I think he might have fought him after that. I don't know, but Jamal Emmers, awesome machine, going down to UFC Vegas 111. Another one for you, UFC Vegas 110. Absolutely love this turnaround. Dante Johnson, that's right, y'all remember Dante Johnson from Dana White's Contender Series, who knocked out, gosh, I can't even remember who he knocked out. It was the tall 6'6" guy, but Dante Johnson, who came into heavyweight like just at the limit, he was low 200s, is now making, guys, I kid you not, his middleweight debut at UFC Vegas 110 November 1st. Wow, a heavyweight win on Dana White's Contender Series has led to a middleweight debut. He takes on Nick Blue Collar Klein. Nick Klein is 0-2 in the UFC, losses in both his contests, knocked out in both. He is going to be fed to Dante Johnson and served on a platter. So good stuff for Dante. Can't wait to see him make his UFC debut. It was Darian Abbey, his name just came to me. That's who he beat. I believe it was episode 3. I want to say it was the greatest episode of Dana White's Contender Series. Or no, would it have been episode 4? I think it was episode 3. Dana White's Contender Series 9.3. That is where he won. Another matchup for you. This one on the pay-per-view, UFC 320. October 4th, Punahele Soriano back after his massive knockout win earlier this year over Euros Medic to take on Nikola Veritaninov. Veritaninov is 1-2 in the company and somehow holds a win over Francisco Prado. I have no idea how he holds a win over Francisco Prado, but he does. He's 13-6 professionally. Punahele is 11-4. And Punahele is kind of having a career revitalization over the last year or so. So I'll be excited to see how he does in this contest. Welterweight division, probably on the prelims for UFC 320. This one for UFC 321 in Abu Dhabi, October 25th. A fantastic prelim banger. Matus Rebistibeke. That Rebiste nickname is definitely brand new. Matus, I don't know how to feel about it. The 20-3 professional who's gone 4-2 in the UFC with wins over Dagir Amavov, Maitabek Orlbay, and Loic Radziboev. And he's also coming off a win over someone, or maybe he lost his last contest. Honestly, I have no idea, but he takes on Ludvid Klein. Ludvid wins over Mason Jones, Ignacio Bahomanez, and most recently, Thiago Moises. He's coming in 7-3-1 in the company, 23-5-1 professionally from Slovakia. Slovakia versus Poland. The fact this isn't on UFC Qatar makes absolutely no sense to me, but I guess Abu Dhabi is close enough. So, banger matchup on the prelims. Probably riding with Matus Rebeke, but that's just a high-level contest. UFC Vegas 112 has another matchup, this one presumably on the main card, women's strawweight division, as the number 7th ranked Yasmin Lucindo, despite beating, I think it was Angela Hill last time out, is now going to be fighting down to take on Jillian Robertson. Jillian Robertson, ranked at number 10, is 13-6 in the UFC, and she has been on a crazy run as of late. This has been her final push in her career, if you will. And, you know, mind you, she's only 30, but there's just something about Jillian Robertson where it's like it's now or never for her, and she has been just pumping out fights. And now this is UFC fight number 20. As for Yasmin Lucindo, she was legit born 7 months before me. 7 months before me is how far ahead Yasmin Lucindo was born before me, January of 2002, which I was born in October, so that's actually 9 months. Clearly, I failed algebra, but this is a great contest. I'm probably leaning with Yasmin Lucindo, but rooting for Jillian Robertson. This is going to be good. I'm very excited for this matchup, and yeah, good matchup on that UFC Vegas 112 card. And you know, it's hard to find good fights on these Apex cards, so we'll take this woman's fights when we can. UFC Vancouver, here's a banger one for you. Lightweight division, Kyle Nelson, who's from Canada, back in action as he takes on Matt Steamrolla Frivola. Both these guys just a bit on the wrong side of things, losing left, right, and center. They really need a turnaround. And hey, 5-5-1 in the company for Matt, 4-5-1 for Kyle. Winner stays, loser goes. Yeah, that's how it'll be. But hey, this is a good fight. I love seeing Canadians fight in Canada. We'll have to see how this one goes. Another one for you on that Vancouver card, October 18th. Cody Gibson somehow getting invited back to the UFC. How are we inviting Cody Gibson back? 3-6 in the company, runner-up on the Ultimate Fighter season 31, I want to say. He was the runner-up? I don't even know what season we're on. As he takes on the Mongolian murderer, Al Gorquin. And you may be like, oh my gosh, Al Gorquin, what a name. The Mongolian murderer, what a nickname. Yeah, he's 3-4 and with a no contest in the UFC. Biggest win is over maybe Johnny Munoz Jr.? I don't even know. Both these guys, super bottom of the barrel. I can't believe one of them is going to actually win this fight. Huh, I'm a little perplexed at this, but I might have to go with Cody Gibson. Two more fights to bring to your guys' attention. Actually, three more. We'll bring three more to your guys' attention. UFC Qatar has a matchup in the bantamweight division. Felipe Lima back after losing to Peyton Talbot at International Fight Week. He'll be taking on Daniel Marcos. Daniel Marcos is 17-1 with a no contest. Just recently lost his first professional fight to Montel Jackson. This is a high-level contest. Both these guys, absolute killers outside the UFC in Peruvian circuits and Brazilian circuits. So I'll be curious how they do when they're matched up. Both these guys are always about 1 to 2 wins away from a bantamweight ranked shot in the division. You know what? Good fight on that UFC Qatar card. This one, UFC Perth, Tom Big Train Nolan getting an opportunity here. He was supposed to be fighting Evan Elder. Evan pulls out. Who steps in? Charlie Campbell. And Charlie Campbell is 2-0. In the UFC, wins over Trevor Peek and Alex Reyes, and just hasn't gotten a fight in almost a year. Like, I've just heard nothing about Charlie Campbell, but he's back. He's taking on Tom Nolan. Tom, he's kind of on a killing streak, man. 3-5 winning streak, wins over Czesław Borchev, Alex Reyes, and Bogdan Grodd. He's been doing fantastic, and especially fighting in Perth, I'm happy for him. That should be a banger matchup. And the last fight I have to bring to your guys' attention, women's bantamweight division, UFC Vegas 111, number 15th ranked Daria Zelenikova takes on Luyana Santos. Luyana is 4-1 in the company. Daria is 2-1 and somehow got ranked, beating Melissa Mullins, which is a little perplexing to me. So Luyana Santos, do what you do. She is coming in at 25 years of age. Daria is 29. Both in their prime, should be a fun time. But yeah, that's all the new UFC fights I have to bring to your guys' attention. It's been a good time. I'll say it's been a good time getting a bunch of fight news left, right, and center. But now we're going to enter maybe just like the rest of September. No massive news. But I do find it pretty cool that every episode, it's only about, like, I'm genuinely being serious, 5 to 6 episodes a year. Mind you, we do over 100 every year, that I don't get fight news, you know? So it's always good to get in fight news. And I'm excited to see what else happens with the rest of the year. Now, I was going to talk about Dana White's Contender Series next. But being that I wrote out my schedule to record this beforehand, I guess we're actually going to talk about fantasy football. That is right, ladies and gentlemen. I am in so many leagues this year. I'm in the most leagues ever. And know what I told myself before coming into this season? I was only going to be in 1 to 2. And while I'm in 6, that's right, I'm in 6. So we're going to go over all of my leagues and just talk about the players I have in each team and also the top fantasy performances that went down this past weekend, or that I can just see on my team. So first up, I'm in a sleeper league again with all the buddies I went to college with. There were 8 of us last year, and now we're all split up, but we're still in a dynasty league, and I'm going to win my matchup over my buddy Wachter. 119-113, and I still have the Vikings defense to play. Starting quarterback Patrick Mahomes, who dropped a nice 26 piece in the loss to the Chargers. Devin Achane is my starting running back. He put up 16.5, not too bad. Chase Brown for the Bengals is my RB2. He only had 13, but that was an awkward game against Cleveland, and Cleveland and the Bengals always play each other close, so not too surprised. Starting wide receiver 1, Amon-Ra St. Brown, only 8.5. Packers absolutely locked down the Lions. He went 4 of 6 on catches and had 45 yards. My wide receiver 2, Nico Collins, shut down by the Rams, 3 of 5 on receptions for only 25 yards. You know, still was able to get 5.5 points. Good enough. Starting tight end Travis Kelce, who I drafted as a meme last year, but he put up 47 yards on 2 catches, caught a tutty. You know, not too bad from a aging Travis Kelce, who, by the way, is now engaged to Taylor Swift. Yay, I care so much. That's obviously sarcastic. In my flex, I have 2 flexes, actually. Devontae Smith, 4.6 points. He went 3 of 3 on his catches for 16 yards. It was a running affair in Philly. The Eagles just ran all over Dallas. No Philly wide receiver did anything good. Now, as for my favorite player on my team this week, Dalvin's protege, James Cook. I mean, 41-40 in the game against Baltimore, 13 carries, 44 yards, 1 touchdown, 5 for 5 on catches for 58 yards, 21.2 points in a PPR league. Amazing work from James Cook. And as for Brandon Aubrey, My kicker in all but one of my leagues, I mean, I have Brandon Aubrey in every league, 11 points, 2-for-2 on field goals, both of them in the 50-yard range, and he even hit a 40-yard field goal, and he even hit a 50-yard field goal. Wow, they are listing out these stats so weird. He went 2-for-2 on field goals. That's what it was. He hit one in the 40-49 range and the 50-59 range. I see how it's listed out. And he had 2 extra points. Good work from Brandon Aubrey. And of course, I have the Vikings defense, who does play the Bears tonight, and I will be looking forward to that matchup. On my bench, Brock Purdy had just under 17 points. You know, a decent performance in the win against Seattle, but he did have 2 picks, which isn't too pretty. Did throw 2 tutties, 277 yards. This 49ers team is just in such a weird spot. I'll be so curious to see how they perform this year. Kenneth Walker is also on my bench. 10 carries, 20 yards, 3-for-3 on catches for 4 yards. Zach Charbonnet really starting to show a bit more of an edge over Kenneth Walker. I'm thinking that Charbonnet might begin to take over. Jaylen Warren, 13.9 points, is another running back I have on my bench. And in that win over the Jets, 11 carries, 37 yards, 2-for-2 on catches for 22 yards, and caught a touchdown. So Jaylen Warren doing good as the Steelers' main running back. Rashid Shaheed, 6 catches for 33 yards. I do have the Saints wide receiver on my bench as well. And my final bench spot is Josh Downs, who only had 2 catches for 12 yards, 3.2 points. There's a reason we didn't start him. Now, I have this very weird thing this year in this sleeper league where you have a taxi squad where you can put first or second year players. I don't really know how it works, but on my taxi squad, Bo Nix with 6.84 points, a very disappointing start from Bo Nix. And by the way, they won by 8 points over the Titans. It was more of a defensive performance by the Broncos. 25 of 40 on completions, 176 yards, a touchdown, 2 picks, 8 carries, 18 yards, and a fumble, 3 turnovers from the sophomore and Bo Nix. Yikes. Not going to get done. Also have J.J. McCarthy on the team. He will debut for my Minnesota Vikings tonight. And we also have Travis Hunter, who was targeted 8 times, had 6 catches, 33 yards. He did what he could. 9.3 points. Honestly, not too shabby from Travis Hunter, especially when you have Brian Thomas Jr. out there. He's going to eat up so many catches for the Jaguars. So that's my sleeper team. We're going to start out 1-0 in that league. And I took, I think, 3rd or 4th last year in this league. It was so funny. Me and my buddy Garrett, we were dominant the entire year. Like, it was really just me and him were the top 2 teams, and we both lose in the semifinals. And we were kind of just like, you gotta be freaking kidding me. This is utterly ridiculous. So that's that. That's my sleeper league. Well, let's go over to ESPN, where I do have 5 leagues. So starting us off, I'm in a league with my cousin and his buddies, and I am presumably going to start out 0-1 unless DJ Moore drops a 23-piece for me tonight. I am rooting heavily for DJ Moore in this game against my Vikings tonight. But on my team, Jaden Daniels, who picked up 20.12 points. He had 233 yards passing and a touchdown. And you already know Jaden Daniels loves to run the ball. He had a fantastic game. 20 points for my starting QB. Jaden Daniels, you're amazing. My starting running back, Christian McCaffrey, 23.2 points. You can't ask for much more from McCaffrey. You really can't. This dude had a phenomenal game. I was more than happy with him. Rushed for 69 yards, had 10 catches for 73 yards, and you already know that. I don't even think he got a touchdown. No, that's just how dominant he was. RB2 is Derrick Henry, 29.2 points for my boy. 169 yards, 2 tutties, and a fumble. Yeah. He was at 30 points before he fumbled. But Derrick Henry, a monster, massive performance from him. And I just have a feeling the Ravens are going to be super dominant this season, especially with those two. Starting wide receiver, Terry McLaurin, 2 catches, 27 yards. That will not get it done, Terry. That will not get it done whatsoever. Very disappointed in you. Very disappointing, you scary Terry. Mike Evans, 10.1 points, is my other wide receiver. He had 5 catches, 51 yards. You know, this was the first game where you saw that the rookie who we're going to bring up in the second, Ibuka, is going to begin to take over the target share. Starting tight end is Tucker Kraft, 9.9 points, had 2 catches, 16 yards, and a touchdown. I can't even hate. None whatsoever. That is what I look for when I need a tight end. Thank you very much. Of course, in the flex, DJ Moore, give me 23 points, which isn't like too like inconsiderate. 10 catches, 130 yards, maybe even gets a touchdown in there. DJ Moore can get it done. Starting flex player, probably the one of the main reasons I'm going to lose, Isaiah Pacheco, 25 yards rushing. He had like 2 catches. Embarrassing performance from Pacheco. He might even be benched this next week. I'm telling you that. Very dead serious. My defense, who literally cost me probably 2 leagues, the Steelers, 1 point, allow 32 points and only get 1 fumble. yeah, the Jets just, the Steelers won, their defense taking a big L. And of course, Brandon Aubrey, 2-for-2 on field goals, 2-for-2 on extra points, 11 points. We love you, Brandon Aubrey. My bench, Olave, that's right, Chris Olave, 12.4 points. Not too shabby, guys. 7 catches, 54 yards. Going to be a good addition. Also on my bench, Tank Bigsby, 12 yards. ETN looked like the starting running back tonight. I think I'm starting to regret drafting Tank Bigsby. One of my backup wide receivers, again, Jacoby Myers, 17.7 points. I should have started both Olave and Myers over Evans and McLaurin. That's unfortunate to see. J.J. McCarthy also on my bench. And how about the debuting Dylan Sampson for the Browns? Dylan had 17.3 points in this game. He rushed for 29 yards, but had 8 catches for 64 yards. A massive performance for the rookie. And another backup wide receiver I have is Rashadman Bateman. 3 points for him on 2 catches for 10 yards. I may or may not bench him next, or may or may not drop him next week. I kid you not. And I also have Darren Waller, who was out this game. I don't know if Darren Waller's ever going to play a game. So unless we get something big from our boy DJ Moore, we may lose in that league. I'm also going to lose again I'm going to lose in a fun league I have with all my other boys from college. It is called, the Mankato League or something? The Courtyard League, because all lived in Stadium Courtyard was the place we lived. I got Jalen Hurts coming in, starting QB, 25.8 points. He had 152 yards passing, 2 rushing touchdowns, a great performance from Jalen Hurts in the victory. A-Chain, starting running back, we only have 1. Then we have 2 wide receiver spots. Ja'Marr Chase coming in, 4.6 points, 2 catches, 26 yards. A disappointing performance, but the Bengals offense really struggled in this game. Jaxon Smith-Njigba, my boy, 9 catches, 124 yards. I literally discovered him last season. Like, I hate that he went so high. Him and Brian Thomas Jr., were my boys last year. I absolutely hate that they went so high this year. But Jaxon, 19.4 points, dominant. Starting tight end, Brock Bowers, 5 catches, 103 yards, 16 points. He's questionable, though. He got hurt. They're trying to intentionally take out my boy Brock Bowers. I am very upset about that. Then Alvin Kamara, 45 yards and a tutty on the ground, 13.7 points. He did decent for the Saints in their defeat. Then we have defensive positions here, and I have no idea how this works, but Aiden Hutchinson got 0 points for me, and Brian Branch got 5 points for me. Very pitiful. My buddy Ryan, he has Andrew Van Ginkle, Byron Murphy Jr., and the kicker Will Reichard tonight. So yeah, I'm definitely going to lose this matchup, but yeah, Brandon Aubrey's my kicker here. We also have punters, and my punter was Sam Martin for the Panthers. He had 2 punts inside the 20, got him 5 points. But Johnny Hecker was Ryan's kicker, and he got way more than me. I also have the Vikings head coach tonight, so maybe Kevin O'Connell can get me a bunch of points. On my bench, Breece Hall, 16.5 points. He will definitely be starting next week, let me tell you that. Actually, I don't know. I'll have to see. Devontae Smith also on my bench. Of course, he had 4.6 points. Deebo Samuel, 22.6 points, 7 catches, 77 yards. Also had a rushing tutty. Your best bet, your boy Deebo is going to be starting, let me tell you that. And Justin Fields, my backup QB, 31.7 points, 218 yards, 3 total touchdowns. He was a killer. I don't know. Fields and Hurts, we're going to have to see who I start week to week. Then I also have Jesse Bates III as one of my backup safeties, who may become a starting safety. So good to be starting off 0-1 in this league to start it off. But to be fair, Ryan had the most points this week, and I believe I had either the third or fourth most. I think it was the third. I had the third most points this week. So of course I have to play the guy who gets the most. Oh well. Then my fourth league. It's a family league, and only 3 people showed up for the draft besides myself. So of the 8 people in this league, yeah, only 4 people drafted. But I took up a bunch of players that I didn't have in other leagues, such as Joe Burrow, who only had 8.82 points. I also did get Saquon, who put up 18.4, 60 yards at tutty. Saquon did pretty good, being with how the Eagles just ran the ball at the time. Of course, Derrick Henry, 29.2 points. What a beauty. Nico Collins, 5.5, disappointing. Jack Smith and Jigman, 19.4, a beauty. And then, how about the rookie Tyler Warren for the Colts? 7 catches, 76 yards, 14.9 points. Guys, Tyler Warren is going to be, I think, the next Brock Bowers this year. We're going to have to see how Loveland does tonight. He's the Bears' top tight end. It's Loveland and Warren. They were being looked at as the next Brock Bowers / Sam Laporta, since tight ends are kind of blowing up. There's one good new breakout tight end every year. So we'll see how Warren does, but so far, 14.6 points, great debut. Also, in my flex, Zay Flowers, 7 catches, 143 yards, and tutty. One of my boys last year. I hate that I haven't been able to nab him in all my leagues. Zay Flowers, Jackson Smith, and Jigba, Brian Thomas Jr. All my boys are all broken up, but we have Zay Flowers in this league, and he doubled his projected total. Also have the Vikings defense in this league, and Chris Boswell, who went 2-for-2 on field goals, 4-for-4 on extra points for 16 points as a kicker, is my kicker. I absolutely love him. On the bench, Cortland Sutton had a great game, 18 points for the Broncos, 6 catches for 61 yards and a tutty. He did amazing. Also have DeAndre Swift. We'll see how he does tonight. He's on the bench. David Montgomery, 25 yards, had a couple catches, got 8 points. Isaiah Pacheco, 4.8, disappointing. Michael Pittman Jr., solid 20, 6 catches, 80 yards and a touchdown. He did amazing. We also have Debo in this league, and we have Trevor Lawrence, who had 178 yards, a touchdown and a pick for only 10 points. Yeah, pretty pitiful. But this team is pretty good. I'm going to win 140 to 112. Actually, we're going to add points with that Vikings defense. And by the way, the Ravens defense put up -6. So thank you, Uncle Dan, for playing them. That really helped me. Last two leagues to talk about with you guys. First one, a random league. I put on a random league every year, invite a bunch of random people. 10-man league. My name is King Aura, and I'm going to beat my girlfriend, which I kind of do feel bad about. But you can thank the Ravens defense for that, Lexi. I'm very sorry. Dak Prescott starting QB, 7.82 points. We have Justin Fields, though, on the bench, so you best bet Fields is going to be starting from now on. Bijan, I had the number 3 pick. I nabbed Bijan Robinson. 24 catches and a receiving touchdown. Doesn't even begin to just show the workhorse that he was in this game with 24 fantasy points. He had 100 yards receiving. That's crazy. Bijan, an utter beauty, despite losing to the Buccaneers. Chase Brown, 13.1 points. Devontae Smith, 4.6. We talked about both of them. Then I have what may be the best wide receiver this draft, Amika Egbuka, who put up 23.6 points for the Bucs. 2 tutties, 4 catches, 67 yards. He is going to be a breakout star. Step aside, Chris Godwin. Step aside, Mike Evans. Your time has come. We have a new Buccaneers star player. Then I ran a 2 tight end look. George Kittle, Brock Bowers, both doing great. George Kittle had 12.5, but getting hurt. Brock Bowers, 5 catches, 103 yards, getting hurt. So my 2 tight ends that I absolutely love, Bowers and Kittle, may not even be surviving the next week. Now, they're both flex positions, I do want to say, but still, yeah. Very unfortunate. I have the Vikings defense. I have Brandon Aubrey. There you go. On the bench, David Montgomery. We also have Tank Bigsby, Justin Fields. We also have Jordan Mason and Adam Thielen, 2 Vikings players that will make their season debut tonight. Excited to see how they both do. Adam Thielen back on his team. Jordan Mason debuting on a new team. Stephon Diggs also on my bench. 6 catches, 57 yards. The Patriots suck. I could say it outright. The Patriots are a bad team. Got 11.7 points. Not going to cut it. And then my star backup wide receiver who may have earned himself a starting spot if Bowers or Kittle goes down. And that's going to be Garrett Wilson. 7 catches, 95 yards, and a tutty. Justin Fields has found his new favorite target. What an absolute beauty. Then getting into the main league, if you will. This is my 16-man league. You can win a bunch of money in it with a bunch of my friends. I mean, 16 is insane. We're down 91 to 57. It ain't looking good, boys. It ain't looking good. We had a rough start. We really did. Lamar did great. 29.36 points. I love you, Lamar Jackson. Ashton Jeanty, 12 points, 38 yards, and a tutty. Didn't really do enough. In fact, on my bench, Jackson, Jacory Merritt, 14.2 points, another rookie for the Commanders. He did better with 14.2. Also have Tank Bigsby on the bench. He got to go. We also have Cam Ward on the bench. He got to go. Also on the bench, Jordan Addison, who will be coming off of suspension soon. And, of course, Colston Loveland, who I think is going to be a breakout tight end. We'll have to see. But Jeanty and Lamar, 2 stars on my starting lineup. I also have DJ Moore and TJ Hockenson. Those two boys are going to need to combine for 33 points. And I think that's doable. Actually, 34. Let me correct myself. They need to combine for 34 points. I think it's possible. I really think it's possible. But Devontae Smith, 4.6 points, selling for me. Steelers D with 1 point, selling for me. Brandon Aubrey, I love you. If only I had known that my buddy Ethan wouldn't have had the Ravens kicker, Tyler Lupin, who got 13. That one hurt. He also had Packers D with 11. Garrett Wilson, 22. Josh Jacobs, 14. And Patrick Mahomes with 26. Now, he could have completely eradicated me because on his bench, Justin Fields with 29.5. Keenan Allen, who put up 19.8, and Keon Coleman, who put up 25.2. Just a bunch of breakout games for Stars today. But the top fantasy guy, to no one's surprise, is Josh Allen. 38.76 points in my PPR league. 394 yards passing, 4 total touchdowns. He was an utter animal. It was a pleasure to watch Josh Allen just do what he does. I mean, I could have taken him this year, but this year I really just wanted to take players that I had never had before, and that might be my downfall, but I do have fun picking these players nonetheless. I'm projected to lose by 9, but don't count out DJ Moore and Tyler Hawkins, or TJ Hawkinson. I think they're both going to come out swinging and ready and take over the game. So those are all my fantasy teams. Those are some top fantasy performances from this past week. Let me know how my team sound. You know, I got 6 teams. I got a lot of players. I literally wrote out all my players. I have so many of every category, and then I have Brandon Aubrey in 5 leagues and Chris Boswell in 1. I think it's hilarious that I'm just such a big Brandon Aubrey fan, but he is just, in my opinion, the best kicker in the league. Now, before we talk about Dan Witt's Contender Series, I think we briefly discuss week 1 of the NFL season. So we covered a bunch of stuff, so we won't have to go too in-depth, but kicking us off on Thursday, we did have the Cowboys losing to the Eagles. Dominant work from Philly. They only scored 1 field goal in the second, so literally Cowboys shut out in the second half. This was a great defensive stand. Team stats, just want to say this right here, 158 rushing yards for the Eagles to 119 for the Cowboys. Doesn't really showcase just how dominant the run game was for the Eagles. I mean, it was just evident that they were far better. You know, for the Cowboys, they did have a breakout game from starting running back Javonte Williams, 54 yards, 2 touchdowns. He did wonderful, even had 2 catches for 10 yards. CeeDee Lamb, 7 catches, 110 yards. He did pretty good. George Pickens, 3 catches, 30 yards, was kind of locked down. And as for the Eagles, Jalen Hurts, only 152 yards passing, but when you and your starting running back are both rushing for 60 yards each and both running in touchdowns, that'll get it done. Crazy enough, most targets, Dallas Goedert, most yards, Jahan Dotson. A.J. Brown, 1 catch, Devontae Smith, 3 catches. So, good stuff for Philly. They will start out 1-0 over their divisional rival, the Cowboys. Moving into Friday, you had a Friday game on YouTube. Chiefs and Chargers in Brazil, and you witnessed a upset here as the Chargers knock off the Chiefs to start off the season. But I'm not surprised by this at all. I swear that the Chiefs lose at the start of every season. I swear that always occurs. Like, is that just me, or are the Chiefs always losing? I genuinely think that is a recurring thing. Game was close the entire way. I mean, 27-21, it really came down to that final drive, and the Chiefs just couldn't get a first down. To save their life, they could not get a first down. Chargers maintain the lead, come on strong. Justin Herbert, 218 yards, 3 touchdowns. Pardon, 318 yards, 3 touchdowns. That's how good he was. Now, Amari Hampton didn't have the best debut, 15 carries, 48 yards, not too bad, but the wide receiver department. Quinton Johnson, 5 catches, 79 yards, 2 touchdowns, banger. Ladd McConkey, 6 catches, 74 yards, banger. Keenan Allen, 7 catches, 68 yards, and a touchdown. Is he back? He might be back. I kid you not. Keenan Allen might be back. Oh, man. Dominant performance for the Chiefs. Mahomes had the most rushing yards. Pacheco and Kareem Hunt did nothing. Xavier Worthy got hurt. Hollywood Brown, 10 catches, 99 yards, was the best wide receiver for them. Juju, he put up 5 catches, 55 yards. Kelce catches the only receiving touchdown for the Chiefs. So, rough start for Kansas City, but I don't really care. I'm not a massive Chiefs fan whatsoever. Now, getting into our Sunday noon games, biggest shocker to open the year as the Colts upset the Dolphins 33-8 and shut them out 20-0 in the first half. Wow, Daniel Jones putting up almost a 30 bob in fantasy football. Dude was on one. Dude was on one this entire game. 272 yards passing for a touchdown. Also had 7 rushes for 26 yards and 2 touchdowns. Daniel Jones, that's what we do in Minnesota. You don't even have to play a snap and we'll revitalize your career. JT, Jonathan Taylor, 71 carries. Also DJ Gittens getting 12 carries for 41 yards. They're clearly showing they're not afraid to run it with him. Michael Pittman, as we talked about, 6 catches, 80 yards, and a touchdown. He was a beauty. Tyler Warren, 7 catches, 76 yards. He did wonderful. And Alec Pierce had 1 catch, which was a 36-yard pass. Good for him. For the Dolphins, yeah, this one was bad. This one was really bad. By the way, so bad, Tua is benched, and Zach Wilson comes in to round out the game. Tua goes 14 of 23, 114 yards, a touchdown, and 2 picks. picks. A-Chain, 7 rushes, 55 yards, and 3 catches for 20 yards. Caught the only touchdown of the game. He was the only high point. Waddle, 4 catches, 30 yards. Tyreek, 4 catches, 4 yards. This was not pretty at all. This was really bad. Dolphins do not look good whatsoever. And I don't know if it's the Colts looking good yet or the Dolphins looking bad. We're going to have to give it probably about 3 to 4 weeks. Then we'll actually be able to analyze. But good win for the Colts to kick off the season. Also, one of the better games of week one, it was the Steelers and Jets. Man, what a banger. Starts off the game. We're going to halftime, 19-17. Jets are winning. At one point, it's 26 to freaking 17. I mean, I was like, is this wraps? And then Aaron Rodgers, this was the Aaron Rodgers that we missed. This is the Aaron Rodgers that we have been waiting to see in New York that we never saw. 22 for 30, 244 yards, 4 touchdowns. Insane. Insane. Warren only had to run it 11 times for 37 yards because they were throwing this ball left, right, and center. DK in his Steelers debut, 4 catches, 83 yards. Calvin Austin III, 4 catches, 70 yards, and a tutty. Pat Freiermuth, 3 catches, 28 yards. Jaylen Warren, 2 catches, 22 yards, and a tutty. Ben Skowronek, 1 catch, a 22-yard touchdown. Jonnu Smith, 5 catches, 15 yards, and a touchdown. This was a phenomenal performance from the Steelers offense as much as their defense sold for me. As for the Jets, don't hang your head low. Justin Fields, 218 yards and a touchdown passing. 48 yards rushing, 2 touchdowns running. I mean, incredible. Incredible. Breece Hall, 19 carries, 107 yards. Also had 2 catches for 38 yards it was. He did good. All right, Breece Hall is clearly the starting running back. That's what he does. Now, Braylon Allen, you know, he only ran the ball 6 times for 9 yards. Did steal a goal line touchdown. So, Breece Hall knocking in the end zone is kind of something to just note on. Garrett Wilson, 7 catches, 95 yards, and a touchdown, was the best wide receiver. No shockers. I'm happy to see that Justin Fields is still doing well and that Aaron Rodgers looks beautiful in a Steelers uniform. So good stuff for the Steelers starting off the season with a win. Jaguars-Panthers, battle of our big cats. And I mean, the Panthers look like they haven't improved at all. And in fact, for the Jaguars, I expected way more of them in this matchup. And they just looked like they were still trying to get their bearings. So 26-10, they get it done. Panthers don't even get a touchdown until the fourth quarter, and they had 1 field goal in the first quarter. Bryce Young, 154 yards, touchdown and 2 picks. Yeah, it might be time to let Bryce Young go. I kid you not. I just don't know if he's up to it. Chuba Hubbard, 57 yards, didn't really do much. Tatorian McMillan, clearly going to be a star. That's why they drafted him. 5 catches, 68 yards. Good stuff from him. And mind you, they drafted Xavier Leggett last season. Only 3 catches, 10 yards. They really need to get him involved if they want to have success. Now, for one of my favorite teams that isn't the Minnesota Vikings, that is the Jaguars. Trevor Lawrence, 178 yards, touchdown and a pick. Looked a tinge rough. Travis Etienne, though, 143 yards. Goodness me. Goodness me, Travis Etienne is clearly the star. Very sad to see that, Tank Bigsby did not do well. Brian Thomas Jr. had a 1 rush for a touchdown and had 1 catch for 11 yards. So nothing too impressive from him. Hunter Long, an 84 freaking tight end, caught a touchdown. No idea who that is. Brenton Strange was the lead guy, 4 catches, 59 yards. But Travis Hunter, 8 targets, 6 catches, 33 yards, good for him. Jaguars winning to no one's surprise. I think I'm 10-5 on my picks for this week one, which isn't too shabby. So good stuff for the Jags. This is a game you should have won, and they did win. Boring game up next, Cardinals and Saints. Cardinals win 20-13. I don't even know what to say here. There were 2 field goals in the second half. I will say the Saints didn't look as bad as I thought they would have. They didn't do that bad. Spencer Rattler threw the ball 46 attempts, completed 27 of them, 214 yards. Kamara rushed in a touchdown. Juwan Jensen was the lead wide receiver. Olave did pretty good. Rashid Shaheed got 6 catches, which is pretty nice. And yeah, the Saints are going to be rough this year, as expected. For the Cardinals, you know, Kyler, only 8 incompletions on 29 throws, 163 yards for 2 touchdowns, also ran it for 38 yards. Trey Benson, James Conner, kind of splitting the workload, but on less carries, more yards for Trey Benson. Marvin Harrison Jr., 5 catches, 7 yards, and a touchdown. Trey McBride, 6 catches, 61 yards. Those are your stars. James Conner, on 4 catches, was able to bring in a touchdown. A predictable win for the Cardinals, and the Saints kept it way closer than they needed to. So I don't know how far either of these teams will go this season, but yeah, this is one of the more boring games of week number one. Now, as for one of the more... we'll wait to save that. We'll talk about this one real quick. Another blowout. Commanders, 21-6 over the Giants. Started off Only 14-3. Yeah, only 14-3 in the first half. Then the Commanders, you kind of just realized the Giants were never going to rally. Russ, 17 for 37, 168 yards, did not do anything. Also was the lead running back with 44 yards. Kind of funny. Malik Nabers, 5 catches, 7 yards, did what he had to, but man, this Commanders team looking better than ever. Actually, I do want to say one thing. Cameron Scadabaugh, so glad I didn't draft him. Dude just does not. I think he's like too small for the league, if I'm being honest. He's bigger than me, I'll say, but I just think he's too small for the NFL. For the Commanders, Jayden Daniels, 233 yards and a touchdown passing. Rush for 68 yards. Ja'Cory Kroski-Merritt, he's going to be the lead running boy. Okay, 10 rushes, 8 yards and a touchdown. Amazing. Deebo, 119-yard rush for a touchdown, 7 catches for 77 yards. This was the Deebo McDaniels at JCM show. Okay, wow. Impressive stuff from all these boys. Eckler getting literally nothing when he was in. Didn't show like he was doing anything. Zach Ertz caught a touchdown as well. Good stuff for the Commanders. They were the upset team last year of being super good. Now they have expectations for this season. Moving on to this banger game, Buccaneers and Falcons. And Buccaneers coming out on top 23-20 because Young Hoku missed a game-tying field goal. Embarrassing stuff for the Falcons. Baker Mayfield, 167 yards, 3 touchdowns. Beauty. Bucky Irving, 37 yards on 14 carries. Decent. Amike Buka, 4 catches, 67 yards, and 2 tutties. We love him. Bucky Irving did catch a touchdown as well. And Mike Evans had 5 catches for 51 yards. Now, let's talk about the Falcons. 296 yards, pardon, 298, and a touchdown from Michael Penix Jr. Didn't look too bad. B-Tom and Allgeier split carries, same yardage with 24. It's Penix who runs in a touchdown. But in the receiving realm, Bijan, these screen passes and little throw-behind passes you can do to Bijan, and he just cooks down the side of the field. 6 catches, 100 yards, 1 touchdown. He looked amazing. Kyle Pitts, 7 catches, 59 yards. Uh-oh. Kyle Pitts Sr. getting it done. Drake London, 8 catches, 55 yards. Ray McLeod III, 3 catches, 51 yards. This team looking pretty good. You know, I think the Buccaneers just still have Baker leading the helm, and the Falcons just need to find themselves. But Bijan is going to be an absolute stud for this team, let me tell you that. And Penix, you know what? He didn't look too shabby. Keeping our noon games a rolling, Bengals knock off the Browns, 17-16. This was a pitiful game. No scores in the fourth at all. And yeah, Browns quarterback room is Joe Flacco. 1 touchdown, 2 interceptions, 290 yards, attempted 45 passes. Sounds like a Joe Flacco stat line. Now, I do want to highlight an absolute stud, which is probably going to be their lead running back, Dylan Sampson. 29, you know, rushing yards on only 12 carries. Wasn't the best, but 8 catches for 64 yards. He looked good in that apartment. Cedric Tillman, 5 catches, 50 yards, and got a touchdown. Jerry Jeudy, 5 catches, 66 yards. We'll see if he gets involved at all. For the Bengals, like I said, Joe Burrow didn't even get to 115 passing yards. Chase Brown didn't even get to 50 rushing yards. T. Higgins, 3 catches. Jamar Chase, 2 catches. I actually have no idea how the Bengals offense did so poorly, but they won. So at the end of the day, a win's a win's a win's a win, which is all they look for at the end of the day. Raiders and Patriots rounded out our, what was it, noon o'clock schedule, I think it was. And yeah, Raiders win 20-13. I will say, you know, this Raiders team looks better than last year. They've had some improvements. I will say Geno Smith looked like an improvement. 362 yards, touchdown on a pick. That'll do it. Ashton Jeanty, 19 carries, 38 yards, a touchdown. I think one of the main things with Jeanty is that the Patriots were preparing so hard to just stop the run. He just kept right into that. And also, this was his first ever NFL game. A lot comes with that. Brock Bowers, 5 catches, 103 yards. Beauty. Jacoby Myers, 8 catches, 97 yards. Incredible. Trey Tucker, 2 catches for 54 yards and a touchdown. You'll love to see him. And Ashton Jeanty had 2 catches for 2 yards. I think he'll improve this season. In fact, matter of fact, I pray he does better because he's my starting running back in my 16-man league. What was I thinking? For the Patriots, Drake May, 287 yards, touchdown and pick. Rough, rough game for Drake May despite landing 287 yards. Running back wise, Ramondre, 7 rushes, 15 yards. Travion Henderson, 5 rushes, 27 yards. Yikes. Kayshon Boutte, 6 catches, 103 yards, was the top guy. Stephon, same number of catches for 57 yards. Hunter Henry had 4 catches, 66 yards. Yeah, not much was going on with the Patriots at all. So, Raiders getting a big win to their season. Good for them. Now, getting into our 3 o'clock games. I mean, 49ers and Seahawks might have been the best one. You know, it was one of the better games I saw. Good debut for the 49ers here. Brock Purdy, 277 yards, 2 touchdowns. Did fumble it once and throw 2 picks, which was awful. But McCaffrey, 69 yards rushing, 9 catches, 73 yards. I mean, looking like he didn't miss a beat. Ricky Purcell, 4 catches, 108 yards. Might be wide receiver 1. Kittle caught a touchdown. You also had Jake Tongas catching a touchdown. I don't even know if he's a rookie or something. But Brian Robinson Jr., by the way, 9 rushes, 33 yards, and was able to get a catch for 4 yards. So clearly going to get involved with this offense. Now moving on to the Seahawks, Sam Darnold, 150 yards. That's it. That's all he did. Zach Charbonnet outworking Kenneth Walker as well. You know, dominant stuff there. Smith and Jigba, 9 catches, 124 yards. I don't think he's going to have any competition for Cooper Kupp, who only had 2 catches for 50 yards. Sorry, 15 yards. So L from Cooper Kupp, W from Jackson Smith and Jigba. Sam Darnold, you're going to be the Kirk Cousins of this season. I hate to say it, when you leave Minnesota, you aren't as good as you were before. Now, get into another 3:30 game. This one, man, you know, you just hate to see it. Cam Ward, 112 yards. That's it. That's it from Cam Ward. Only threw the ball 12 of 28 times. Yeah, another freaking these. Why is it the number one drafted QBs are never the top guy? Is there a lesson to be learned here from these front offices to not draft these elite quarterbacks in college? I mean, Cameron Ward, I understand this is game one and the Broncos defense is amazing, but man, leaving little to be desired. Tony Pollard, 18 rushes for 60 yards. 1 catch, 29 yards. Tony Pollard, the only high point of this game. Actually, my bad. How about the kicker? How about the kicker for the Titans who hit freaking, what was it, four freaking field goals? Amazing work from Joey Sly, I think his name is. But other than that, just abysmal. Now, also for Bo Nix, he had 3 turnovers. He didn't do well at all. RJ Harvey and J.K. Dobbins split in the backfield. Cortland Sutton was good. 6 catches, 61 yards, a touchdown. Rough start for the Broncos. Titans, little's expected of you. So to be fair, the Titans have 0 expectations. So in fact, they have nothing to lose. As a Titans fan, you have nothing to lose. Final 3 games to bring to you guys. 2 more at the 3:30 slot. Lions, Packers, domination from Green Bay, which I hate it. I don't like Green Bay. I'm playing Green Bay players. Oh, you hate to see it. For the Lions, Jared Goff, 225 yards, touchdown pick, locked down. David Montgomery, only 25 yards. Jahmyr Gibbs, only 19 yards, locked down. Sam Laporta, 6 catches, 79 yards. He was good. Amon Ra, 4 catches, 45 yards. Not good. Jahmyr Gibbs, 10 catches, 31 yards. That's where he's getting all his fantasy points from, for goodness sakes. And the lone touchdown caught for the Lions was Isaac Tesla. Isaac Tesla? T-E-S-L-A-A. I think his last name's Tesla. Must be in cahoots with Elon Musk. Now, I guess I should talk about the Packers. J. Love, 188 yards. Only 6 incompletions for 2 tutties. My dad was actually at this game. Josh Jacobs, 19 carries, 66 yards, a touchdown. Clearly the workhorse in the backfield. Romeo Doubs, 2 catches, 68 yards. Jaden Reed, let me just tell you something. I'm not even going to read off the Packers stats. I'm going to tell you something right now. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 different Packers caught a freaking pass. All right? Out of those 10 people, only one of them, Josh Jacobs, was a running back. I mean, utterly insane. Insane. Actually, my bad. Chris Brooks is also a running back. So 8 different wide receivers / tight ends caught passes. You can't trust a single wide receiver to start in fantasy for the Packers. They just have too many weapons. They really do. So unfortunately, my NFC North rival, the Packers, are starting the season off with a win. And we wrapped up our 3:30 slate with just a disappointing game. Rams win 14-9 over the Texans. Just nothing to be desired. Nothing at all. No touchdowns for the Texans whatsoever. CJ Stroud, 188 yards and a pick, looked rough. Nick Chubb, 13 rushes for 60 yards. Kind of good to see from him. Leading wide receiver, Jaden Higgins. What? I mean, what? You got freaking Nico Collins out here and you only passed him 3 times. That sucks. Now for the Rams, Matthew Stafford, 245 yards and a touchdown. Devontae Smith had 4 catches, 51 yards. There you go. But Puka Nacua, 10 catches, 103 yards. He's still the top dog. Kyren Williams, 18 rushes, 66 yards and a tutty. He's still the top dog. So nothing's changed in LA and they start the season with a victory. And to briefly wrap up, our recap of week one here. Let me just tell you, Ravens-Bills, game of the week so far. Game of the year. Well, when you put the two best teams in the AFC against each other, you're going to expect some big action, and that's exactly what you got here. I mean, insane. How about the rally from the Bills? 22 of their 41 points in the fourth quarter. Alrighty, I mean, you saw two touchdowns from the Ravens in the second, two in the third, one in the fourth. I mean, this was a phenomenal game, 41-40. They win it at the buzzer for the Bills with a field goal. Just amazing. Simply amazing. And team stats, by the way, total yards, 432 for the Ravens, 497 for the Bills. I love you both. I love both these teams. They both just make it fun to watch the sport when you're watching. Lamar, 14 for 19. That's right. Lamar only attempted to throw the ball 19 times. 209 yards and two tutties. Also had six rushes for 70 yards and a tutty. He was phenomenal. D. Henry, 169 yards, two touchdowns. We already talked about how amazing he is. Zay Flowers, seven catches, 143 yards and a tutty. DeAndre Hopkins, catching a tutty. I mean, just amazing. Just amazing all around for this Ravens team. But it's the Bills. Like I said, Josh Allen, 394 yards, two touchdowns, rushed for 30 yards, two touchdowns. He's amazing. James Cook rushed in a touchdown. Keon Coleman, breakout game for him. Eight catches, 112 yards, a touchdown. This is the Keon Coleman everyone was expecting last season. Dalton Kincaid got a touchdown. Josh Palmer and Khalil Shakir both getting into double-digit fantasy points. A great win for the Buffalo Bills. I'm excited to see his team for the rest of the season. I think both these teams will run it back multiple times. But yes, that is your week one NFL recap, which somehow took 20 minutes. I did not even think it would take that long. I think we should do it how we did last season, where I combined talking about fantasy football and I combined talking about week one of the NFL season. But I did just want to tell you all about my fantasy team, so now you know about that, and now you know everything that went down and my thoughts on each and every matchup. But we do have some predictions to make on this episode. I know we're gonna be making tons next episode, by the way, week two NFL, and also you have UFC Noche. We're going to San Antonio. That's gonna be amazing. But we also have episode 5 of Damon's Contender Series to talk to you guys about. So without further ado, 5 new matchups to bring to your guys' attention. And kicking us off, we head to the women's straw weight division as Chanel the Nightmare Dyer takes on Carol Annabelle Foro. Ew, scary nickname, Carol. Chanel is 6-0. Carol is 8-1. 5'6 and 5'2. You have 4 inches in height for Chanel Dyer and 4 inches in reach as well. 65 inches, 61. Both women fight in the orthodox fighting position. But yeah, those 4 inches in height are a real advantage for Chanel Dyer. Chanel Dyer, 24 years young, from London. She trains out of Great Britain Top Team, a good gym. Some notable names that train out of there: Nathaniel Wood, Loner Kavanaugh, and Mark Diakise. Of her 6 wins, she has 4 KOs, and she actually went 3-0 in the PFL. She's fought in the PFL before, which is really good for her. Last win was in September of 2024. She picked up a win, and a notable person she lost to on her amateur scene was Shauna Bannon. We're actually going to talk about later today. So, Chanel Dyer, she's younger, she's undefeated, she's coming in hungry to win. And she takes on Annabelle Carol Foro. Carol is 28 years old, from Brazil, currently riding a 6-fight winning streak. Of her 8 wins, she has 7 finishes, 6 KOs and 1 sub. And all 6 of her knockouts have come in round 1, 5 of which... all 6 of her... What is my stat here? Okay, I wrote this down, guys. I don't know my notes, but I write this down. She's on a 6-fight win streak. Oh my gosh, I'm an idiot. Of her 6-fight winning streak, all 6 of them have been finishes, 5 in round 1. Oh my gosh, I gotta really write out full sentences when I take fighter notes. Let me just tell you that. So, Carol, been on a finishing streak. Chanel Dyer also loves to finish her opponents. When I'm just looking at who is, like, size-wise bigger, who has stylistically more advantages in this, I'm gonna go with Chanel Dyer. I think she just trains with better people. Carol Foyo, look, you can meet up a bunch of random people in Brazil, it ain't gonna translate to the UFC. Give me Chanel Dyer. Maybe even go with a little round 2 knockout just to spice it up. Alrighty, moving on from our first women's fight of the season. Is this our first women's fight of the season? I can't even remember if we had another women's fight on the previous 4 weeks, but nonetheless, Chasen Mestizo Blair takes on Samuel the Protege Sanchez. Chasen Blair is 7-3. Samuel Sanchez, 10-1. Both men are 5'10", 3 inches in reach for Samuel Sanchez, 74-71 inches, and they both fight in the orthodox fighting position. Now for Chasen Blair, this is opportunity 2 on Dana White's Contender Series, as he did fight on episode 9 in season 8. The 26-year-old is from California and actually graduated from UNC. That is right. Him and Michael Jordan went to the same college. Of his 7 wins, 7 finishes, 4 KOs and 3 subs. Of his 3 defeats, he has been submitted once and knocked out in another one. He's gone 7-2 professionally in Cage Warriors, where he has fought in all of his fights, besides the one he had on last season of Damon's Contender Series. His last win was in April, and he has 6 of his 7 wins in round number 1. Last time out, Chasen Mestizo Belair took on Cody Steele and was able to hang around with him in round 1, 20-17. And then right when he was starting to get some momentum in round 2, he got clipped to the body and it was over from there. But to be fair, Cody Steele's a dog. Cody Steele and Rong Zhu is one of my favorite fights of the year, maybe of all time. So Chasen Belair back for another opportunity, having your only loss in the under the UFC banner to Cody Steele isn't the worst thing in the world. But I'll tell you what is one of the worst things in the world. It is taking on the 10-1 Samuel the Protege Sanchez. 22 years young from Brazil, trains out of Galpalo da Luta, the same gym as the great Halton Almeida, the number 5 heavyweight in the world. Of his 10 wins, 8 finishes, 7 KOs and 1 sub. He currently rides a 7-fight winning streak. His last win came in March. And to be honest, you know, I know Chasen Belair has fought in, like, people in Cage Warriors. Cage Warriors is where they breed a lot of future UFC fighters. But the stuff about Samuel Sanchez just being 22 years old, training at the Halton Almeida gym, you know, I just, when I'm looking, I always get to look at the 2P people when I look on Tapeology, you know, and I do miniature research. When I say I do research, I don't want people to think I'm looking in depth of these guys. No, I do surface level scanning of these fighters. I like Samuel Sanchez a bit more. But actually, I underlined Chasen Belair. So this is always interesting. This is always interesting, guys. When I originally take all my notes, I underline who I'm going to pick. Then I go through another thing and see if they align. And I underline Chasen Belair for some reason, even though I think I'm going to go with Samuel Sanchez. So I don't know why I underlined Chasen Belair before, but right now I'm underlining Samuel Sanchez. So will we trust Zachary from the past or Zachary from the future? Well, you'll have to see. Who knows more, me when I'm originally doing this or me currently now doing this? Because Chanel Dyer I aligned on, but this is one of the few times I've actually disaligned on. So I'm going to go with Samuel Sanchez over Chasen Belair, but we'll have to see what takes place. Moving on to our third matchup, the light heavyweight division. Gosh, I love the light heavyweights and heavyweights on here. Always my favorite. Felipe Nhigao Franco takes on the barbarian Freddy Vidal. Oh my gosh, I didn't know Freddy had a dirty nickname like that. Felipe is 8-0. Freddy is 3-0. 6-1-6, 3-2-inch height advantage for Freddy Vidal and 3 inches in reach. 79-76. Orthodox stance for both of these fighters. Felipe is 24 years old from Brazil, and he also trains out of Galpalo da Luta. So him and Samuel are both boys. Of his 8 wins, 8 finishes, all in round 1, 5 KOs, and 3 subs. His last fight was in August of 2024. So been a minute. He was originally supposed to fight Iron Gritiske, who then had to pull out. He was then originally supposed to fight Quentin Paisley, who got injured. So now we get Freddy Vidal, who is the third and final option for Felipe Franco. Jeez, Aloo, this boy has been unable to get a fight. His opponent, Freddy Vidal, trains out of New York and is 7 years older than Felipe Franco. The 31-year-old trains out of Sarah BJJ and Longo MMA, gyms that are notorious for having Nazim Sadikov, Marab Dovashelli, Aljamain Sterling train at them. Of his 3 victories, 2 of them have came in round 1 by knockout. He has gone 5-0 as an amateur. His last win came in June. So Freddie, super happy for you getting an opportunity in the UFC. I know nothing about him. I know nothing about Freddie Vidal, and it's actually a tinge concerning because I feel like normally I would pick him. This is the third option. He does have height advantage, but I don't know. I'm already riding with Samuel. Is the Galpalo da Luta gym really going to take back-to-back losses? Heck, they could, but I'm going to ride with the 24-year-old Felipe Franco to get a knockout victory here. But honestly, I don't know. Anything could happen. I just hope for exciting fights. That's really all I hope for at the end of the day. Moving into our second last matchup in the featherweight division, we have another former Davis Contender Series fighter. That is Cam Chaos Teague as he makes a second chance against Larian Gunslinger Douglas. Okay, Larian Gunslinger Douglas. Can I just pick them right off the bat? Do I even have to cover this? Because Larian Gunslinger Douglas is one of the best nicknames I've ever heard. Cam Teague, 9-1. Larian, 12-5. 5'10 to 5'9. 1 inch in height for Cam Teague. 3 inches in reach for Larian. 72-69. Orthodox stance for both of our fighters. So, coming in, Cam Teague is 27 years old from Alabama, currently on a 2-fight winning streak. Of his 9 wins, 7 are by finish, 5 KOs and 2 subs, and he's currently on this little 2-fight winning streak with also a win in boxing. back in May. He got a KO in boxing. So after he had been defeated by Kevin Vallejos last season, getting knocked out in 2 minutes and 23 seconds, he has been able to get 3 fights of some MMA degree, 1 in boxing, 2 in actual MMA rules. So Cam Teague back for another opportunity. To be fair, Kevin Vallejos is super talented and has gone 3-0 in the company with 2 knockouts. So good stuff for him. But yeah, Cam Teague, yeah, kind of looks kind of weird. I don't know how to, he just doesn't scream like UFC fighter to me. I don't know what that is. But his opponent, Larian Douglas, is 30 years old from Brazil, now trains out of California, currently on a 4-fight winning streak, trains out at Bloodline Combat with Alpha Garcia, Cub Swanson. Of his 12 wins, 8 are by finish, 6 KOs, and 2 subs. Of his 5 defeats, he's been finished 4 times, 2 by sub, 2 by knockout. He's gone 4-1 in LFA and is their current champion with a defense. His last win was in June of 2025. Yeah, I'm going with Larian Douglas. I saw Cam Teague fight Kevin Vallejos. I saw Cam Teague, how he looked as of right now. I'm very confident in Larian Douglas in this contest. Plus, he has more experience. He has 17 professional fights to the 10 of Cam Teague, which I know doesn't mean much at the end of the day, but still, for this contest, I think it's going to apply. Now, let's get into our main event, because it's heavyweight action. Heavyweights on the Contender Series, and we need heavyweights. We need heavyweights. I was about to mention Dante DeLeje, so we do have a brand new heavyweight in the UFC, but we need some more young guys to come in, and we get it going with Anthony the Day Walker Guiracio as he takes on Stephen Concrete Asplund. Asplund, that is his real name. Anthony, 3-0, 1 no contest. Steven, 5-1. 6'5 to 6'2. Wow, 3 inches in height for Steven Asplund and 6 inches in reach. Wow, 78 to 72. Orthodox stance for both of our fighters. Kicking us off, Anthony Guiracio, 31 years old from Florida. All 3 of his wins have came by round 1 knockout. He's actually originally supposed to fight Guilherme Pat, which I thought would have been a better matchup, but Guilherme had other plans. He fought last time out in April, of course, a round 1 knockout. Anthony, welcome to the UFC banner. Now, his opponent, Steven Asplund, taking this on somewhat short notice. The boy fights out of Minneapolis, Minnesota, is on a 2-fight winning streak. He's actually fought under the Ignite promotion, which is the thing I've gone to twice to watch. The 27-year-old has 4 KOs of his 5 wins, and he's gone 4-1 under the LFA banner. Huh. Good for him. I'm going with Anthony Guiracio. I do not like people fighting on short notice. Steven looks like he would beat up anyone that has zero talent. And honestly, I don't need an expert analysis to just say I'm going to ride with Anthony Guiracio. Like, I just generally think Anthony is just going to get this one done. And plus, when I think of names and I try and picture them fighting in the UFC, that's what I really try to do. I picture Guiracio over Asplund. I'm just saying it how it is. So we're going to go with Anthony Guiracio to get this one done. But hey, it's the Contender Series. Anything can happen. And by the way, I do not ride or die on any of these fighters. I always am just happy to know that someone's going to be making it into the UFC. So, Chanel Dyer over Carol Faro is my prediction. Maybe a knockout. I could hope for a knockout. Samuel Sanchez over Chase and Blair. It's giving decision. That one, I'm thinking decision. Felipe Franco and Frey Vidal, I think one of them's going to sleep. I think Frey Vidal might be a bit too ambitious, and Felipe might catch him. Larian Douglas by, freaking, I don't know, body kicks to Cam Teague. And Anthony Guiracio and Steven Asplund, I'm thinking a little round 1 TKO for Anthony Guiracio. So, those are your Day 1's Contender Series 9.5 predictions. We'll have to see how all of these fights go down. But, ladies and gentlemen, that is not all we have on today's episode, as we still have our UFC Paris recap. The best event of 2025 went down. Actually, I should say fight night, because the pay-per-views have been better. But the best fight night of the year went down. We went 9-4 in predictions. We got a lot to talk about. The entire course of the UFC has shifted to an extent, and we have lots to unpack. First off, to no one's surprise, to literally no one's surprise, this was the best crowd of the year. I mean, better than any pay-per-view crowd ever. This crowd is electric. I mean, they made these fights so good. Like, when a fighter was getting rocked, they were going ballistic. I mean, they had me in my living room just going like, oh my gosh, yes, I love this. Like, you can feel the energy through the screen. And it was from the get-go, just from the opening bout. And by the way, guys, we had 13 fights. 13 fights on this card, 11 finishes. You really can't ask for a much better card. You really can't. I mean, I don't even know who got performance bonuses. So at the end of the day, just give all these guys performance bonuses. It was incredible. But kicked off the card, woman's strawweight division. Sam Hughes getting a round 2 submission of Shauna Bannon. This was unfortunately an eye-opening experience for me that Shauna Bannon is not cut out for the UFC. I'm just going to say it now. Shauna Bannon is not cut out for the UFC. And she was an underdog. We rode with an underdog. It did not pay off whatsoever. Sam Hughes outstrikes her in round one, 13-7, landed one of two takedowns for 4 minutes of control time. Round two, similar scenario. Sam Hughes lands a takedown. Shauna Bannon tries to get back to her feet. Her back is easily taken, and she is submitted. So, in 6 minutes and 58 seconds, 5 minutes, 29 seconds of control time for Sam Hughes, and she gets the sub. And for Sam Hughes, it's her fourth career sub. Good stuff for her, getting her sixth career finish as well. Very happy for Sam Hughes. 3-fight winning streak now, 2-0 in 2025. I think it's time Sam Hughes looks to tinge up the rankings at women's strawweight. Hello. We have a fight coming up. We do, between Loma Luke Boonmi and Estella Nunez. I believe her name is. Or is it? No, it's she beat Estella Nunez. Who is it? Loma Luke Boonmi's taking on Alexia Thanera, the lady who submitted Molly McCann, and then she retired. Whoever loses that would love to see Sam Hughes take on. Really, really would love to see that. I believe you also have Denise Gomez has a fight coming up, or if Denise Gomez doesn't have a fight, you could have Denise Gomez come up. They're ranked number 14 and 15, respectively, in the women's strawweight division. Would really love to see that. For Shauna Bannon. All right, for Shauna Bannon, I don't know. Look. She's gone 2-2 in the UFC. All right. She's hasn't been very impressive, but I don't know. I don't think she's worthy of being cut, per se. I mean, she's 31. There's still time to rally, but I just don't really see a world where, like, I'm excited for a Shauna Bannon fight. I'm not really. So, couple options. We're going to look at some people Sam Hughes beat recently. First up, Stephanie Luciano. She's got a fight coming up with Ravina Oliveira. Both of those women are coming off of losing streaks. Whoever loses that will be on a 2-fight losing streak. I think that is who Shauna Bannon should take on next. So, Stephanie Luciana, Ravina Oliveira, whoever loses that takes on Shauna Bannon. That's just something easy to do. But this was a great win for Sam Hughes. Sam Page improves to a little 3-fight winning streak. Good stuff for her. Next up, welterweight division, Renat Fakhretdinov. How about another sub-minute finish as he knocks out Andreas Gustafsson in 54 seconds. Great win. Great win for Renat. So I can't believe he was an underdog in this fight. Like, I just knew he should have been an underdog. The winning streak is now at 20 fights in a row. I believe the unbeaten streak is at either 21 or 22. He's just been on a tear. He's been on absolute tear. Make it his 12th career knockout, 19th career finish. And simple as this is that Andreas wasn't even shooting for takedowns, but he kept leaning in with the style that he has. And he was just, his chin was just hanging out. Chin was just hanging out. I mean, 23 significant strikes to 5. And then once Renat clipped him, went up against the cage, started unloading on him. I know people are saying like some back of the head shots, but look, they weren't actually back of the head shots, okay? Dominates him, TKOs him. Renat Fakhretdinov, you are just amazing. So, 6-0 with a draw in the UFC. I guess his win streak's only officially 3 with a draw, but I think we can all look around that draw. So, Renat, what do we do with you? I think it was pretty evident whoever won this was getting a ranked opportunity. So, we got Daniel Rodriguez at 13. We got Jeff Neal at 12. The biggest I can give him is Gilbert Burns at 11, but I'm really liking that Daniel Rodriguez and especially the Jeff Neal. I think the Jeff Neal fight would be a really good fight. So Jeff Neal, Renat Fakhretdinov, that's what I think you should do next. This was an easy, simple win for Renat, and especially a guy named Andreas Gustafsson who provided a real challenge. This was good. Good work for Renat Fakhretdinov. As for Andreas, the 4-fight winning streak does come to an end in unfortunate fashion. This is the first time he's ever been KO'd in his career, which is unfortunate, but hey, you will bounce back. I have faith you will bounce back, Andreas. Don't lose hope just yet. And who do I have to fight next for you? None other than the man who Renat beat last. That's Carlos Leal. And Carlos Leal, I thought was going to be a tear, was going to go on a run, and he was knocked down 42 seconds by Muslim Salikov. So we got a guy like Andreas Gustafsson. They're in their, beginning to get into their 30s, and I think that's a perfect fight. Carlos Leal, Andreas Gustafsson, book that fight. But similar to the matchup we just discussed, Renat Fakhretdinov, you are going to be getting some much bigger opportunities here, and I think they involve some of the bottom 15 at welterweight. Good stuff for Renat Fakhretdinov. Then, next up, middleweight division, one of my favorite picks, Rob Brzezinski, plus 200. I knew it. I just freaking knew Rob Brzezinski wasn't as bad as we saw a year ago. A year and a half, I should better say, is he just destroys. He destroys Brad Tavares. 68 seven strikes to 42, 77 total strikes to 50. Both men landed takedown, which both men oddly have exactly a minute and 22 seconds of control time. I don't know how even that could happen. But it did. And yeah, minute and 43 seconds in round number three, the fight is finally stopped. Now, round one, a 10-8. I have no idea how Brad Tavares survived. He was dropped only officially once, but it looked like multiple times. He was getting clipped. I mean, the chin on Brad Tavares, do got to give him some credit. Rob Brzezinski was throwing just the kitchen fridge at him, for goodness sakes. I mean, it was wild. And round two, bit closer, you know, Rob defends a takedown, Brad Tavares outstrikes him 15-9, but the power looking more with Rob. And then finally, round three, Rob had him hurt, defended a takedown, had him up against the cage, was laying into him, Brad Tavares leans down, and that was it. Rob Brzezinski, the 12th career knockout for him, and he improves to a very stellar record of 18-6. Good stuff for Robert Brzezinski. And you know what? His fight against Yair Proterra in February of 2024 is just, you know, it's a completely different year away. You know, we're closer to February 2026 than we are to February 2024. So, Rob Brzezinski, happy to see where you go from here. The middleweight division is always happy to have new people to fight. I don't really know who, you know, I don't know, it could be anyone, but, you know, there's a fight coming up. Ikram Makhachev and Jun Young Park. I think the loser of them could provide a good opportunity for him. If Andre Munez and Edmund Shahbazyan, if I think the winner of that would be a good opportunity for Robert to get another fight in, and I don't know, but here's just another option. If we want to test Bo Nickel, if he gets past, who's Bo Nickel fighting at UFC 322? Oh my gosh, he's fighting the Brazilian, the BJJ, Rodolfo Vieira. If Bo Nickel can get past Rodolfo Vieira, I think Robert Brzezinski could provide a good striking challenge, which he could overcome. So there's a plethora of middleweights out there on the planet for Robert Brzezinski to fight. I mean, Ishmael Nurdi, another good name that comes to mind. But as for now, relishing the victory and relishing your round three TKO of Brad Tavares. As for Brad, I don't know, he's 37. 1-3 in his last four. I mean, he's actually, to be fair, he is 2-5 in his last seven. I would maybe consider retirement. Just briefly, you know, I'd maybe just ponder it a tad. But there's going to be aging veterans he can fight. You know, maybe he fights Michael Okojasek. Maybe he fights, I don't know, Andre Petrovsky. I don't know. It's really hard for me to think. But Brad Tavares, I'm sure he'll get a bounce back fight. But those are two names for you right there. After that fight, we dove into a little round one finishing streak, which was just so enjoyable to watch. First up, welterweight division. Finally, I picked him. Goodness me, I have not picked Sam Patterson in any of his UFC fights before. And he goes out there and just starches Trey Waters 3 minutes and 1 second. And by the way, these two are striking pretty casually. You know, Sam Patterson has this kind of weird lanky style. He's a pretty tall welterweight. I believe he's 6'3", 6'4", so he's a pretty tall boy. Actually, how tall is Sam Patterson? Is he 6'5"? He is 6'3". There it is. And, you know, Trey Waters, you know, he's kind of similar style, but then Trey Waters just gets clipped with a straight and lights her on his feet, like, right away. And then Sam is just hitting him. And Trey Waters is, by the way, moving his head to dodge, and every punch is just hitting him in the skull. I'm like, I'm watching, I'm just like, you are blocking none of these shots, Trey. What are you doing? Eventually, ref just saves Trey from getting officially knocked out, and Sam Patterson gets his 6th career knockout. All right, so give him a 100% finishing streak. By the way, 14 wins, 14 finishes. He's now on a 4-fight winning streak in the UFC. All 4 of those wins have came in round number 1. And by the way, none of them have lasted longer than 3 minutes and 10 seconds. This dude is a problem, okay? This dude is a problem. And Sam Patterson, I think he's earned a good opportunity. I think he's earned Daniel Rodriguez at 13. You know, that's why I was debating having Renat take on Daniel Rodriguez. But I really think that Sam Patterson has earned himself a fight against Daniel Rodriguez. I mean, this was a great win. This was a fantastic win for Sam Patterson here. And I'm excited to see where he goes from here. As for Trey Waters, I mean, this is, you know, snaps his little winning streak here. You know, this is a tough loss. First time he's been knocked out in his career. It was not good. It was not good. And to be honest, I don't really know what to do with him. You know, I'm going to throw out that he can fight Axel Sola, who we're going to bring up in a bit. That's just an if. Unless Rhys McKee stays around, then you could do that and winner gets kicked out of here. But I don't know. Trey Waters did not look good. Sam Patterson did look very good, though. So Sam Patterson moving along. 4-fight winning streak all in round one. He should be getting a big opportunity. Next up, this one was sad. I know, I picked Harry Hardwick just for the memes, and Cal Fernandez just chewed up his leg. 24 submission strikes, 2-8, and by the way, 41% of those shots were to the leg. It was bad. It was really bad. Harry never stood a chance. And yeah, he'll fall to 13-4-1 as he... So he's getting hit with leg shot, leg shot, leg shot. And eventually, like, it gets to a point where he gets kicked in the leg. He can't even stand up. Like, Cal, like, backs up. He's like, stand him up. And he can't even stand up. So Harry... Oh, man. First time finished his career. Tough defeat. But Cal Fernandez. Let's talk about this guy for a second. This dude's on a 3-5 winning streak. This dude's only loss is a split decision to Mark Diakite in 2023. This guy's pretty talented. 30 years old. Trains out of the same gym as Jose Aldo and just got his 6th career knockout of 11 victories. 8 finishes of 11 wins, too. And 2-0 in 2025. I wish he could turn around for the Rio card. I don't know if it's possible, but lightweight division, I liked what I saw. I really did, and I think there is a spot for him to maybe make a run up the rankings. I just don't know where to begin it, to be fair. I don't know who to have him take on next. Now, I always love matchmaking on the same card, and we do have another lightweight match we're going to talk about, but I don't think either of those guys should be who Cal Fernandez is taking on. So when I look around, there is Elvis Brenner, but he's on a 3-fight losing streak, which doesn't really make sense. There's also Espan Rivovic. I think Espan Rivovic could put on a very good fight against Cal Fernandez. I actually might recommend that. And then there's also Nasrat Haqparast, who's on a 5-fight winning streak. So Nasrat Haqparast or Espan Rivovic, I would both recommend to take on Cal Fernandez. I think those could be both really good opponents. Now, what do we do with our boy Harry Hardwick? I don't know, guys. I don't know. I think, honestly, if we want a matchmaking on the same card, him versus Bellagio Key, I would run that fight. So, and I'm not even going to overthink it. Bellagio Key versus Harry Hardwick. When we get to Bellagio, I'll just, you know, reference back to this. So, good stuff for Cal Fernandez. He absolutely destroyed the leg of Harry Hardwick, and his leg kicks are going to be a fearsome thing in his next bout. Next up, I still am so shocked this wasn't on the main card. This would have had the main card crowd going ballistic as Ante Delice gets the 2-minute knockout of Marcin Tybura, one of my favorite wins on this entire card. 13 cinnamon strikes to 4. I mean, it is as simple as feeling out, feeling out, feeling out. Ante just starts unloading. He clips Marcin with a beautiful punch, backs him up on the cage. He's going backwards, clips him again. Down he goes. Follow-up shot. Marcin's out, and Ante Delice, after all these years, after almost a decade, over a decade of trying, made it into the UFC. Such a feel-good moment. His buddy, training partner Tom Aspinall, the current champion, having tears outside of the ring. I mean, this was such a good moment. This really was. And a 12th career knockout, 19th career finish for Ante Delice. The winning streak is now at 2, both of them in round 1 by knockout. This was such a feel-good win. 26-6 record now for Ante Delice, and he's going to go from unranked to the number 7th ranked heavyweight on the planet. So happy. So happy for Ante Delice. This was just amazing. This was just utterly amazing. So good stuff for Ante Delice. And yeah, he'll be ranked at number 7. Marcin Tybura, are we shocked he was knocked down? Not whatsoever. 10 career losses, 7 of them he has been finished in, 6 by knockout. Just funny enough. So yeah, Marcin Tybura, we'll talk about him real quick. This does snap his little 2-fight winning streak, which sucks. But you know what? He's going to fight down. And I think the 11th ranked Shamil Gaziev is a perfect start. Shamil Gaziev versus Marcin Tybura. Easy and simple. Let's book it. Or if you want to give Derek Lewis another opportunity to climb the rankings, we can do Derek Lewis versus Marcin Tybura. But the real interest here is in Ante Delice. So Ante Delice, 35 years old from Croatia, is going to be ranked at number 7. Come the rankings update. Above him, Waldo Cortez Acosta, Halt Lameda, Curse Blade, Sergey Pavlovich, Volkov, and God. Now, I know him and Aspinall are boys, but I really don't think we have to worry about them fighting. I'm going to be honest, guys. I really don't think there's going to be a scenario where those two have to end up fighting. And I, you know what? I either think Delice is going to lose or Aspinall is going to lose. I just don't see that overlapping. But what do we do with him? Well, we could give him another layup win over the 6th-ranked Waldo Cortez Acosta. We could do that. We could also do the loser of Halt Lomain and Volkov. I like that. But there's two names which I really like. Sergey Pavlovich at 3 and Curtis Blades at 4. And both will just prove, can he overcome certain stylistic things? So Sergey Pavlovich, we've seen him be broken, but Ante could really bring that back out of him. You know, with Jerzy Rozenstruik, with Waldo Cortez Acosta, neither of those guys pushed the pace against Pavlovich which really led to him having to unleash anything. Like, Pavlovich just outstruck both those guys. Simple as that. Curtis Blaydes, on the other hand, takedown heavy. That's what he does. We saw Ruslan Kuniev successfully defend them over and over and over again. But can Ante Delije do it? So, if Blaydes or Pavlovich, I both really like for Ante Delije. Now, if I'm actually going to matchmake and choose one, I'm going to go with Sergey Pavlovich. I think Sergey really needs this win. He's going to have to keep building on just a win streak or land a big knockout if he wants to get another title shot. And as for Ante Delije, he is easily going to be two fights away from getting a title opportunity, especially with him and Tom Aspel being friends. And with everyone above him, wins against Sergey Pavlovich, potentially even Volkov, Blaydes gone, are going to be guys he needs to beat. So, Pavlovich versus Delije. Let's book it early 2026. Let's put it in front of a crowd. Main event. I love it. Now, moving into our final prelim of the evening, it was Omar Sy and Brenson Ribeiro. And Omar Sy, as easy as it gets, dispatches of Brenson Ribeiro. I mean, I kid you not. 2-4 takedowns, took him down, TKO'd him from the back. I mean, as simple as it gets. Fifth career knockout for Omar Sy, and what a good bounce back win after losing to Alonzo Menifield. I knew he was way better than the Alonzo Menifield loss, and by the way, I didn't even think he lost to Alonzo Menifield. So, good win for Omar Sy, back to 12-1, back on the winning streak. Yeah, this kid's good. Especially get the win in front of a Paris crowd, which is his hometown. Oh man, it felt so good to see. Only 29 years young. Let every division stand on lookout. So, what do we do next with Omar Sy? I don't know, to be honest. Alonzo Menifield's ranked at number 14. I would say Zhang Minyang at 15, but also I was kind of thinking the same thing for Modestus Bukauskas. So, I don't know. There's lots of options, but maybe someone like Dustin Jacoby. Test him against a veteran, per se. You could even have Omar Sy take on Ian Kudalaba. Ian Kudalaba came right to my mind. Ian Kudalaba, Omar Sy, let's book it. I love it. Yes, that's a perfect match right there. As for Brenson Ribeiro, cut him. Cut him. Or actually, you know what? We have a light heavyweight matchup on Contender Series coming up we just talked about. Let's have the winner of that. Whoever wins, if they actually are super good between Felipe Franco and Frey Vidal, they can debut against Brenson Ribeiro, and that'll determine if Brenson Ribeiro can remain, because he's now been knocked out in round one in the last 3 months, twice. So, I mean, clearly Brenson Ribeiro is not up to par with UFC talent, but to be fair to Brenson Ribeiro, his losses are to Zhang Minyang, Azamat Mirzakhanov, and Omar Sy. These are all very talented people, so good win for Omar Sy. I'm very excited to see how you do in the future. Then we got into our first decision of the night, which was such a vibe killer going to the main card in the first fight as a decision. It just really was. But William Gomez, Robert Urchala, back and forth affair. This was way more even than a 30-27. Judge Ben Cartledge, okay, 29-28 was the correct score here. William Gomez getting it done against Robert Urchala. Yeah. Good win for Gomez. Now, 49 cinnamon strikes to 34, 66 soul strikes 54, 2-for-2 on takedowns for Gomez for just under a minute of control time. For Urchala, 2-of-6 on takedowns for 4.5 minutes of control time. I think it was round one Gomez, round two Urchala, and then round three was back and forth, but Gomez just looked a tinge better. But also, I do want to say that Urchala was never in danger of being finished, and honestly, I don't think Gomez is a finisher, which may come back to haunt him in his UFC career, but yeah. Gomez, good win. He'll improve to 5-1 in the UFC, and yeah, featherweight division. Look out. There's a lot of unranked featherweights out there to fight. If we want to test Gomez against the likes of Giga Chikadze, if we want to test him against maybe Gabriel Santos, maybe there's a fight going down with Jack Jenkins in Perth. You know, if Jack Jenkins comes out victorious, which I think he will, that's a fight we could run, but not options there. On the flip side, for Robert Urchala, I mean, I clearly think the guy is UFC caliber. I honestly just, you know, he wasn't even affected by the booing of the crowd. 11-2 record now, former KSW champion. I would love to see him get back in here, maybe against the Sodiq Youssef. You know, I think Sodiq Youssef could really bump him back up to a degree. We could even have him take on Dranerson Brito, Pat Sabatini. I mean, there's a lot of guys. A lot of guys for Robert Urchala to fight. We'll have to see what happens. Haider Amil, another name you could have him take on. But yeah, I think both these guys will be back. But Gomez picks up the victory. Good work for William Gomez. Then we're back on the finishing streak. Axel Solo, Rhys McKee. I'm not even going to give Rhys the benefit of the doubt. Look, we'll say that he could maybe take on Trey Waters. Other than that, get him out of here, dude. Ryan McKee is not UFC caliber. 14-7 record. He has a 1-5 UFC record. It's insane. And Axel Sola made him look silly. Look, I get people are saying this was a premature stoppage, but okay, he was losing anyways. I saw the angle that Herb Dean saw, and I think everyone kind of acknowledged, okay, from his angle, it looked like he was over. Like, so he gets clipped with a body shot really bad. All right, still going. He then gets clipped with another bad one, drops down. He's in fetal position, eating punches. Rise doesn't start to, funny enough, rise up until Herb is, like, pushing Axel off him. So I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt. I think Axel Sola got a good finish here. He's now 11-0. He's insane. He also has 6 career knockouts. And, yeah, we have another French fighter who is clearly talented. Round one starts off pretty slow. Axel landed a takedown to really discredit him, you know, kind of show that he's still good. Round two, 18-7 strikes to 16, more power. And then round three, 18-7 strikes to 11, Axel unloaded. And yeah, this kid's talented. This kid's super good. I'm excited to see what he does in the UFC. So Rise, like I said, Trey Waters are getting cut. As for Axel Sola, welterweight division, you best look out. And like I said, you know, there's guys out there. He could fight. Maybe it is Sam Patterson. Could be someone. Maybe Andreas Gustafsson takes on Axel Sola. I don't know. It's tough to say, but there's going to be options out there. There really is. Maybe someone like Billy Ray Goff. Maybe a little Ramiz Brahmaj. I don't know. There's a lot of guys out there. You could even have him take on, who is the Wales guy? Who's that Welsh fighter? Oban Elliott versus Axel Sola could be a fun fight. So, good win for Axel Sola. Waited until 2 minutes into round three, so he took a sweet time. But when he got it done, he did it. Now, next up, is it comeback of the year? This could be comeback of the year. Mason Jones, Bellagio Keane might be comeback of the year. When I do my, because by the way, the award show, it's coming up late December. We're going to be finally doing it. But I think Mason Jones might have comeback of the year. Against Bellagio Keane. Round one. Bellagio drops him and is just laying ground and pound on him. I mean, I think the famous clip going around is the clip of freaking Aiden Ross, who put 500K on Bellagio Keane, and he's just doing like this little dance. He's all cheering for him. And then Mason Jones not only reverses it in round one, but drops Bellagio Keane in round one. Round two comes around, takes him down right off the bat, and just lays an unearthing of ground and pound on him. 37-7 strikes to 9. Mason Jones 2.0 since getting cut from the UFC and coming back. 6-fight winning streak, 8th career knockout, and he has 3 finishes on this 5-fight winning streak. Yeah, I mean, Mason Jones, incredible work. 2-0 in 2025 in the UFC. Good work for Mason Jones. But yeah, comeback of the year. This dude was dropped, was getting his brains bashed in, is able to rally, bring Bellagio Keane down, is able to survive a submission attempt as well, and then gets it done. Great work for Mason Jones. As for Bellagio Keane, yeah, tough defeat. 1-2 now, his last 3. 1-1 in 2025. Really just unloaded the tank. This gave me flashbacks to Terrence McKinney and Drew Dober. If anyone remembers that incredible 3-minute fight that it was. But yeah, Bellagio Keane, I have a perfect first opponent for you, Bellagio. Yes, I do. And his name is Harry Hardwick. I really think he should just run that fight. Why not? He'll probably end in round one anyways. So yeah, Mason Jones getting it done, and he deserves a tough opponent next. He really does. He's earned it. Mason Jones has earned it, in my humble opinion. Now, is it someone ranked? No, But you could make a case for Mauricio Ruffy. You really could. You could make a case for a lot of lightweight guys. Cal Fernandez, you could make a case for. You could make a case for Chris Duncan, for goodness sakes. You could make a case for Matheus Rebecca. But Mason Jones is going to be having some big opportunities coming his way, and I'm excited to see what they are. So I might go with the Matheus Rebecca. You know, obviously we talked about how he has a fight coming up with the Ludwig Klein. So maybe the winner of that. Justin Mason Jones? I don't know. But good stuff for Mason Jones. Round two TKO thanks to some nasty elbows. And speaking of elbows, light heavyweight division, Modestus Bukauskas, Paul Craig. What a tough way for Paul Craig to go out. But Modestus Bukauskas in his bag. Fairly slow start. A lot of working at the clinch. A lot of distance striking. But eventually, final 40 seconds of the fight, Paul Craig is being held up against the cage and clinch, pulls guard, which, by the way, one of the worst guard pulls of his entire career, goes down and just starts eating shots. And finally, with about 5 seconds left, one last nasty elbow from Odysseus Bukakis, which literally sounded like taking a hammer and banging it against a door. I mean, it was so hard. And, you know, obviously, Mark Goddard, you know, tells him to step off, the round is ended. And we look, and Paul Craig, you see a big bloody gash on his head. He's just laying there. Game over. Modestus Bukakis gets his 11th career knockout and is just dominant. Utterly amazing work from Modestus Bukakis. I mean, oh, incredible. Incredible stuff. Paul Craig really sucks, man. Ends his UFC career on a 5-fight unwinning streak. He obviously had no contest. And by the way, of his career, 10 losses and the one no contest. Oh, man, 6 in that no contest came in his final 8 fights. So, tough ending to the career of Paul Craig, but he retires in the ring. I think it was a good call. Thank you, Paul Craig, for all the memories. But Modestus, oh my goodness, 4-fight winning streak in the UFC. Incredible. Incredible. And by the way, since losing to Khalil Rountree Jr. in September 2021, he has gone 7-1 and has looked like a brand new fighter. His only loss is to Vitor Petrino in November 2023. So this is his third win in 2025. He's on the verge of the rankings. I think someone like Zhang Mingyang, Alonzo Menafil, Nikita Krylov, all those bottom three will be good opponents for Modestus Bukakis. I believe he has earned it. I believe he has warranted it. And after such a vicious knockout here, I mean, it's time. It's time to give Modestus an opportunity. He has earned it. So Modestus Bukakis, one of the nastiest finishes on this card with just a, oh, hellish elbow. Hellish elbow from Modestus Bukakis. Good work for him. But one thing I want to talk about before we get into our final two fights was that we lost Losin Kita versus Pitbull Patricio literally like 2 days before the event. It is so dumb. Losin Kita came in 4 pounds too heavy. They called off the fight. Just ridiculous. So I don't know if Losin Kita is going to get another opportunity. I hope he does. But the fact that we can't get Pitbull, because Pitbull was calling out Arnold Allen for Rio, I really hope that they try and get Pitbull one more fight in the year. But yeah, kind of an L losing that. Did suck we didn't have it. But like I said, other than that, 13 fights, 11 finishes. Amazing. And our last finish of the night came in the co-main event, because Mauricio Ruffy, Benoit Saint-Denis, was exactly how I predicted it. Because all week I was saying Benoit is going to go in there, he's going to take down Ruffy, he's not going to get struck at all, and he's going to submit him. And literally to the round, I predicted it. That's right, Benoit Saint-Denis gets it done. Easy as that. Easy as could be. 6 significant strikes to 1 in round number 1. 11 to 4. That's right. Only 5 significant strikes landed for Ruffy. Only 17 attempted. I mean, this was crazy. Benoit goes 3 of 10 on takedowns. Just would set up strikes. He'd throw a head kick, throw an overhand, and just get him against the cage. Take him down. Easy as that. He goes 2 of 5 in round 1 for 3 minutes of control time. Round 2 does the same thing. And yeah, takes only 2 minutes and 56 seconds in round number 2 for him to finally get into the back, take position, wear him down, lock in the rear naked choke, and that is that. Benoit Saint-Denis, what a win. I'm all amped up now. I kid you not, I sprinted upstairs. I was all ready to go because Benoit Saint-Denis got it done. 2 straight wins in 2025, both of them round 2 submissions, and this will be his 11th career sub. The 100% finishing rate is still intact. And after a rough 2024 where he went 0-2, finished in both, he is now back in the winning column. Love it. Love it, man. With 2 straight wins against Cal Propolic and Mauricio Ruffy, you know, Benoit's ready to climb the rankings. I'd move him up to 12. I'd put him past Chandler. You know, he has more wins than Chandler in the last 2 years. I'll say that. And, I think the question is, what's next for him? And there's so many options. With Benoit, there's so many options. And one of my favorite things is that he's probably going to lap Renato Moicano, because I think guys he should take on, Beneil Dariush, Mateusz Kamrat, highest I can give him, Dan the Hangman Hooker. I mean, I seriously believe Benoit would stand a chance against all these guys. I really do, and I mean, the ground game here looked phenomenal, and, you know, stylistically, he knew what he needed to do, and he went out there, and he got it done. It's also weird to think that Kyle Propolic almost had more success against him than Mauricio Ruffy did, but Ruffy, you know, he came in, had the moxie, had the confidence, but at the end of the day, when it's time to perform, that's a whole different matter. Ruffy loses his winning streak, man, tough stuff. The 7-fight winning streak comes to an end, and yeah, he'll be 12-2, he'll have to fight downwards in the rankings, but, you know, I think this is just one tough loss, if anything. You know, the fighting nerds, they've had a rough 2025, we can say it. They really have. Carlos Prata is ultimately losing to Ian Gary, but he bounced back. Ruffy losing, we're about to mention another one in a second. So, I think he can bounce back. I think it's just a matter of how low of competition do we give him, because we've seen that he can knock out Bobby King Green, Jamie Malarkey. So we have to give him someone kind of in between there. And, you know, I'd love to see him fight another striker. So, and it seems to me he hasn't been fighting many Brazilians. So I don't know, guys. I don't know. This is kind of like tricky trying to decide. But like I said, we do have Matt Frivola and Kyle Nelson doing battle. I think the winner of that versus Ruffy would be a fantastic opponent. I would really... Actually, you know what? I'm just going to say that. I think that's perfect matchmaker right there. I think I should be a matchmaker. Dana White, hit me up. But yeah, great win for Bon Saint-Denis. So happy we predicted it. Can't believe he was an underdog. I'm a little shocked that he was an underdog in this fight. After that, we got into the main event, and we did ride with Kyle Barallo, and Nazardeen got it done. I never really doubted Nazardeen. I never really did, but I was just hoping Kyle would pull it out. Kyle Barallo at best wins two rounds. You know, the judges' scorecards had it 50-45, 49-46, 49-46. Doesn't really tell how close this was. You know, I can honestly see any scorecard working for this fight, but Nazardeen outstrikes him 81-66 significantly. Both men land exactly 89 total strikes on one another. Kyle Barallo goes 0-5 on takedowns. He, you know, didn't even attempt one in the final round. I'll just say Nazardeen just kind of kept getting the edge. In the strike, he landed a bit harder shots, but neither man was ever wobbled. Neither man was ever in danger of being finished. This is just two of the highest level middleweights we have going to battle with one another. And unfortunately for Kyle, the 17-fight winning streak comes to an end. For Nazardeen, the 5-fight winning streak is now intact. And you know what? I'm happy for him. Really happy for Nazardeen. You know, a great 2025 for him and a bright future ahead as he'll be next in line to take on Khamzat Chimaev. I mean, I don't really know what Anthony Hernandez and Randy Rivera can do. I do think it's going to be a very unorthodox, goofy fight that's actually probably going to be more entertaining than Kyle and Nazardeen, but I think we should just give Nazardeen the next title shot, in my opinion. Now, do I think Nazardeen stands a shot against Khamzat? Not really. Nazardeen didn't really do anything here, hasn't really done anything in his winning streak that makes me think he stands a chance against Khamzat, but nonetheless, he is next in line. He's only 29 years old, which is pretty crazy to say. As for Kyle, you know, first UFC loss, first loss in a long time, but he's still ranked number 7. There's a lot of options left next, you know, Robert Whittaker, Brendan Allen, you know, dare I say MVP. Dare I say, probably those guys. See, Kyle Barallo's going to fight someone 8, 9, 10 range. Either Robert Whittaker, Brendan Allen, or Michael Page. I really think a Brendan Allen fight would be good. The only thing I worry is, you know, Brendan Allen did pick a win. He beat Marvin Vettori. I was going to say justifying it, but yeah, he beat Marvin Vettori. Brendan Allen, Kyle Barallo, let's run it. Now, as for Nazardeen, you know, there isn't anyone else. Like, let's say he gets lapped by the winner of Randy Ritter and Anthony Hernandez. There isn't really anyone else for him to, you know, fight in the meantime. Who does he fight? Just his 2+C and lose, you know? So, I don't know, but good way to end the night. It was entertaining. I will say is that neither of our two fights that went the distance, neither were, like, fight of the night. But if it was going to be fight of the night, I'd give it to Imbolov and Barallo, so... Good job to Nazardeen. Gets it done. Ends UFC Paris as the ultimate victor. And we will see him in 2026 to take on Khamzat Chimaev, presumably. So, with that, ladies and gentlemen, I will send you all on your way. Because this was a fantastic card. It was a fantastic weekend. So much fun. So much good times. And at the end of the day, that is right. You have Nazanivov is probably the next in line for the middleweight championship, which is awesome. So, a lot of fun in fantasy football. New fight. Stainless Contender Series. Week 1 recaps. I mean, this was a jam-packed episode. And this is probably going to be how future episodes are going to be for a while. I'm actually really excited. You know, for the foreseeable future, every single week, we're going to be dialing up 2 episodes. I know I need to start recording myself, but I still don't really have a studio. Like, I don't really know how to, like, I guess there, I could record myself poorly, but I really hate recording myself poorly, so that is what it is. But you guys should also check out my personal YouTube channel, Zachary Ruger. We got a lot of fun content up over there with UFC, with WWE. Got a lot of video ideas I'm ready to make, so check that out if you have some time. And ladies and gentlemen, go watch Dana White's Contender Series. Stay tuned this week as we will be discussing Week 2 of the NFL and UFC Noche. A lot of fun stuff coming up in the coming week. So with that, ladies and gentlemen, have an amazing day. Jesus loves you, and I'll see you next time on none other than the Surprise Jab Podcast.